Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
On this episode of the Football's History Headlines, we discuss the changes to the football code made by Walter Camp and the NCAA Football Rules Committee in 1924, the NFL's announcement of a worldwide league, as well as many more Hall of Fame legendary stories, and they're all coming up in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we are podcasting from America's North Shore, bringing you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So in taking the snap from the sportshistorynetwork.com and handing off to pigskindispatch.com, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends, and welcome to the Pigpen once again. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, your portal to positive football history, and we are here for your football history headlines for this July 19th edition, and we have some great news. Not a lot of news, not a lot of history for this day, but it is some important news, and we're going to get right at it with our newspapers.com football history headline of the day, and it comes from the July 20th, 1924 edition of the Great Falls Tribune from Montana. In their post that said, many changes are made in the 1924 Gridiron Code. Walter Camp released the article for the press on July 19, 1924, and in his presser, he told of how the abuses in the game were forcing rules revisions in areas such as the use of tees and eliminating some loopholes in the football code. Offset goalposts were in question by many and addressed in this new rule, as well as a prohibition of wearing stiff, hard leather shoulder pads without padded coverings and rules on sharp metal spikes on the players' cleats. A real odd one for us today is that the substitute players were not allowed to even talk or call out the word signal without being penalized. Big no-no back then. A big one added in 1924 that we still use today is the player shifting in the offense before the snap had to come to a complete stop for a moment to establish position. This is not an effect for the man in motion rule adopted back in 1895, but only for the offensive shifts. We'll go into more of this in a second here. The officials were given the power that day as well to instruct timekeepers to keep the clock rolling if they felt it was trying to gain an advantage or delaying the game for substitution, timeouts, etc. Other changes that were players couldn't exit out of bounds and legally return to the field during a play, and that the penalty for an illegal forward pass was switched from 10 to 15 yards of enforcement. The officials were limited to only the referee having a whistle and a timekeeper having a signal pistol that he would fire to notify the ref when the time had expired for each period. The most noticeable change, Camp says, though, was to eliminate kicking tees altogether from the game. Balls were to be kicked from the ground without mounds of earth, but a fellow player may hold the ball in place for the kicker. Now, that's a lot to chew on there. Some very, very interesting rules revisions that Walter Camp in the NCAA Rules Committee of 1924 rolled out. Now, you know, the one is only one official, the referee, could have a whistle. And you still see that sometimes, some of the older officials, that was in place for quite a few years. Not in my day of officiating, but I always noticed that officials would, especially on the sidelines, would when they blew their whistle to kill the play, they would raise their hand up in the air. Well, that came back from the derivative of when they did not have whistles, only the referee did. That was their signal to the referee to blow the whistle. They would raise their hand when the ball was dead to help the referee, and he would blow the whistle and kill the play. Now, of course, all the officials, the 5, 6, 7, however many officials you have on the field, they all have a whistle. Some are encouraged not to use it, like an umpire is encouraged not to use it unless you absolutely have to. They don't really want them killing the play. They would rather have somebody with a better view, one of the sideline officials, to do that. Now, let's also talk about the shift. Now, it said that the players that were shifting had to come to a complete stop. Well, that is still a rule in all levels of football, from, I believe, in American football, that is, where a player has to establish position. All the members, 11 members of the offense, have to pause for at least 1 second, establish position, and then they can shift, and then they have to pause a second again before they can enact a snap or put a man in motion. The man in motion, one man may be in motion behind the line of scrimmage, not going towards his own line of scrimmage when the ball is snapped. But he had to set for a second with the rest of his team to establish position. So that rule, back in 1924, that's when Walter Camp really and the guys really came up with that one. And, some of these other things, player going out of bounds and then returning, it's illegal. Well, they've modified that a little bit. If they're blocked out of bounds and could come directly back in, it's not a penalty. But if they go out on their own, come back in, it is still a penalty to this day, just like it was back then. So, we got rid of the signal pistol. That's probably a good safety thing for your ears and for all the spectators and players and everybody else around with somebody with a gun in their hand. So that's probably a real good thing. That's now done with a horn or one of the officials' whistles. And, getting rid of the tees, that sounds very foreign to us. But, they must have had some problem with kicking tees back then, and they didn't want them. And it sounds like some innovative players were, digging up the ground and making a little mountain to stick the football in to kick off with, too. And that says, Mr. Camp, that's a big no-no. So if you want to be able to read through some of the old articles like we did today, the Great Falls Tribune, you need to check out newspapers.com. At newspapers.com, you get access to over 640 million pages worth of news from the U.S., Canada, England, Scotland, Ireland, and more, dating back to 1798. Get a free one-week subscription to newspapers.com by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers, and with a paid subscription, you'll be helping to support the production of this and other Sports History Network shows. Once again, that address is sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers. Get your free week. Now, we also have an article on a world stage, July 19th, 1989. The NFL owners tally a unanimous vote to start a World League of American Football in European cities. The league was later named NFL Europe or NFL Europa. The newly formed league operated from 1991 to 2007 and developed many players that went on to play in the NFL. Great developmental league. I'm hoping maybe they'll bring that back someday. That was a very tremendous league and gave a lot of exposure around the world. And we just read about just a few weeks ago that the NFL, when they disbanded the World League of American Football, or the NFL Europa, NFL Europe, it was because they wanted to put actual NFL games in those foreign cities. They've done quite a few in London, and I know they are planning. They'd love to do some Mexico City, maybe in Germany, Spain, some of these other countries too, in Asia, Japan, for instance. Not sure where those will all go, but I think they're starting to get that timed up here now, having the 17th game where teams can't complain they'd be losing a home game. Having 17 games, you're always going to have your 8 home games, sometimes 9. So that 9th one, might be at a neutral site overseas. So I think that's what part of the plan of the NFL is. And as far as developmental leagues, I think they're counting on, you have the CFL that's been a good league, and the CFL doesn't consider themselves a development league for anybody, but there's been times where players have come from the CFL and in the NFL. But in particular, maybe the Spring League, which sounds like will be the USFL, and the third incarnation of the XFL, and anybody else that pops up between now and then, they will be the developmental leagues. And as always, the biggest and best developmental league for the NFL is the NCAA college game. And I think they're going to continue to rely on that and then develop in-house. So That's really all the news we have. There are no Hall of Fame birthdays for today, which is a remarkable day. Not too often we have that, come on. So that's why we wanted to spend a little bit more time on these rule revisions that Walter Camp rolled out in 1924 and some of their effects that go into the modern game, you know, almost 100 years later. That's truly amazing that they stood the test of time and the game has stood the test of time, and it's the game we love. So make sure you look up more sports history on sportshistorynetwork.com. We have our friends over there, as well as this podcast is found on sportshistorynetwork.com. And you can make sure you check those out. Some very interesting hosts and great podcasts on there and guests. You can go to your favorite podcast provider and please follow us there, and you'll know as soon as our episodes are released, which is every night at midnight, because we podcast every single day of the year. And also, you can go to our website, pigskindispatch.com, and you'll see all of our blog posts and articles on there. And if you want to get on our emailing list, you can email us, or if you want to make comments, pigskindispatch@gmail.com, and we will send you an email each and every morning letting you know everything that's coming up on pigskindispatch.com, and sometimes even some stuff that are happening on the Sports History Network. And we are sure happy that you were able to join us today. We hope you will have the time to join us each and every day. And if you don't, you can always binge listen and catch up on some episodes. Right now we have we're coming up on 400 episodes in just this past year. So that's a very good bit of content that we have out there for you to listen to. You should not run out of things to listen to. And we record more and more every day. So we plan on keeping going. So until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck, because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.